is the Daf Yomi, Masechta Review, Masechta Baba Basra, tape number 5.
For subscription information, write us at Daf Yomi Tapes, P.O. Box 831, Muncie, New York, 10952, or call 1-888-DAF-YOMI.
Shia is Rabbi Yossi Heber.
We're holding the Masechta Baba Basra in the middle of Perek HaMecher Peres at the Mishnah on Daf Tzadik Ches Amid Beis. And the Mishnah says, if someone sells an area to a friend to make a home for his newly wedded son or recently widowed daughter, Rabbi Akiva says, it must be at least 6x4 amos. Rabbi Yishmael says, this is too small. It's like for a cow. Therefore, if he promised him a small house, it has to be at least 6 amos by 8 amos. If he promised him a large home, then it has to be at least 8x10. And if he promised him a minister's home, then it has to be 10 by 10. What about the height of the house? The height of the house has to be the total of half of the length plus half of the width. Proof of this is from the Heichal. The length was 40 amos. The width was 20 amos. 40 plus 20 is equal to 60. And the height of the Heichal was 30, i.e. it was half of the total of the length plus the width. 40 plus 20 is equal to 60. Half of that is equal to 30. And the Gemara says, we see from the Mishnah that it isn't proper for a son-in-law to live by his in-laws. That's why the father builds him a house. And worse than this is someone who is an oreach, who is now an oreach, he is a guest by someone, and he now brings a different oreach. And worse than this is someone who responds before he hears what another person says. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel brought this inyan of the Mishnah about the size of the Heichal. The Heichal was 30 amos tall. The kruvim, which were the birds, were 10 amos high, and from their wings they were an additional 20 amos high. Daf Tzadik Tes. We have a Kabbalah that says that the place of the Aron and the kruvim didn't actually take up any physical space at all. How did the kruvim stand, the Gemara asks. It's a machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. One says that they faced each other, and one says that they faced the bais. If the Bnei Yisrael are doing the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the Kruvim face each other. If they weren't, then they only partially faced each other. And Unkelus Hager said, the faces of the Kruvim resembled the face of a child's. Unkelus Hager is the Parish Unkelus, which appears on the side of the Chumash, which translates the Chumash from Hebrew to Aramaic. The Mishnah. If someone owns a boar, which is inside the house of his friend, he can only enter and leave when people normally go in or out, i.e., for example, by day, and both of the people there should make locks. The Gemara says the key is for the water inside of the boar. The next Mishnah. Reuven has a garden inside the garden of Shimon, and Shimon gave him a path through his property. Reuven can only come in and go out at the times normal people go, and Reuven cannot bring merchants with him through the path to disturb people in the house. The next Mishnah. If someone has a public road going through his field, he gave them the right to use his field as a public road, and then he took this right back and gave them a road on a different part of his field. The rabbim gets the second way and does not lose the first way. If someone agrees to sell to his friend a derech hayochid, he means it should be 4 amos wide. If he gives them a derech harabim, he means 16 amos wide, and if he gives them a derech hamelech, it means an unlimited space of width. Gemara. Why doesn't he get the old path back if he gives him a second path? More answers, since the Rabbanan are very worried about the welfare of the Tzibur. But this won't apply if he gives them an equally good path. Then he would get the first path back. Daf Kuf. If the Tzibur has the rights to a path and they fixed it up, we definitely cannot take it back from the Tzibur. Rabbi Eliezer holds, a Rabbim can be kind of a path by just walking on it back and forth. The Chachamim say, the Rabbim cannot do this, but they need a full chazakah to effect a kinyan. When the Torah uses the term derech, this is equal to 16 amos. For a mace, there is no width limit in order to allow us, many people, to come to a levaya who want to come due to kavod mace. And there are 7 mamodos for the mace, which are done on the day of the burial, but we only do this if that's the minig hamakam. The Mishnah. If someone sells the rights to a burial cave, he must provide 2 caves with a chutzar in the middle. The inside of each cave must be 4 amos by 6 amos, and there must be 8 cavities coming on the sides of the cave, 3 on each of the lengths and two on the short side. The length of each cavity is 4 amos, 3 amos of which is for the dead body, and 1 for the aron. The height of the cave, of the cavity, is 7 tvachim. The chatzer needs to be 6 amos by 6 amos. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, there is no set amount of space, but it depends on the grounds. Daf Kuf Aleph, Gemara. We must make sure that the kvarim are located in such a way so we don't violate the rules of kavod hames. When we have a square amma, the diagonal crossing it will be equal to 1 plus 2/5 of an amma. This is basic geometry. If a person finds a dead body that's lying in a position of burial, it's a proof that it was put there intentionally. But you have the right to move it as long as you take the tfusa, the dirt around it, which absorbed the decay of the mace. The Rashbam says this is referring to the soft dirt underneath the mace, plus an additional 3 tvachim. Daf Kuf Beis. If we find 3 dead bodies in close proximity, we're chayshish the place where these bodies are around is a cemetery, and you must make a search of 20 amas around to be sure there are no more mesim. In this case, it's better, however, not to move any of the mesim. Kutras al-Adaf brings in Shulchan Aruch Yeradeya Reish Shin Samach Gimel a number of possible situations where there are exemptions to this halacha, i.e. in which a person is allowed to be moved from one grave to be relocated in a different place. First, the Talmud Yerushalmi in Ma'id Katan, Daf Dalad Amid Beis, says that it's pleasant and satisfying for a person to be buried near his relatives. Therefore, the Yerushalmi allows relocating a grave to a family plot. This is also brought at Igris Moshe, Yerodea Chelek Aleph, Simen Reish Lamed Vav. The Chacham Tzvi permits exhuming a corpse from a Goyish cemetery in order to rebury it in a Jewish cemetery. The Or Zeruah rules that where a grave is in danger of being destroyed by a flood or by Goyim, the corpse may be relocated to a safer spot. Rabbeinu Yeruchim permits relocating a corpse from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, since burial in Eretz Yisrael provides a person with a special kapara, as alluded to in the pasuk of V'chiper ad Masai Imai, the land shall atone. The Maralbach adds that even if it is known that the deceased was not favorably inclined towards the idea of being buried in Eretz Yisrael, still in all, his children may opt to bury him in Eretz Yisrael. He says that as long as the father did not explicitly tell his children not to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, it's commendable for them to give their father the privilege and kapara of a burial in Eretz Yisrael. This marks the end of this parak. Now let's begin parak Zayin, Beis Kur, from Daf Kuf Beis, the Mishnah. If a person says to his friend, I'm going to sell you a Beis Kur of land that's equal to 30 saw, so it must be land which is plantable. If this land includes large crevices or big boulders, these are not considered part of the Beis Kur. But he says, if he says the Lashon of like a Beis Kur, then it is included because the sale is as is. If he says, I'm giving you a piece of land which is like a Beis Kur, then regardless of what there is on the land, boulders or whatever, the sale is considered as is, and those are included in the 30 saw. Gemara. If someone is makdish his field at the beginning of the 50 years of Yovel, he can redeem it via the payment of 50 shkalim per year. But if there are large boulders, these are not considered part of the cheshbon. Daf Kuf Gimel. A person doesn't want to receive land that looks like it's 3 different fields, but he wants to work on 1 big field. The Gemara says only large stones are excluded from the cheshbon. Smaller stones are included. What if they're small but are scattered in such a way that it's difficult to plow the field, for example, in a circle? Gemara says, teiku. Mishnah. If a seller says, I'm selling you exactly a Beis Kur, if he gave even a drop less, he must deduct it from the price. If he gave him more, the buyer must give it back in cash or land. Daf Kuf Dalad, the Gemara. If a seller doesn't specify an exact Beis Kur, then we assume he means approximately a Beis Kur. If we're dealing with a lot of land, Rav Huna says the shear in the Mishnah of Tes Kabin applies even to a very large piece of land in a valley. And if we have 9 Kabin, the buyer must return the land. Rav Nachman says, we look at each kur individually, and if we have 7.5 Kabin for a kur, i.e. a rive of a kav for each saw, then only more than this must the buyer return the land. If a wall separates the field, do we say it is still usable by the meicher, or it's considered a hefsek? Mara says, teiku. the Mishnah. If the Meicher uses both an exact Lashon and an approximate Lashon, the Mishnah says, the second expression cancels the first one, since according to Bananas, we say, Tvais Lashon Achron. We go after the second Lashon. If we have two Lashonis that contradict each other, we give legality to the second one. Daf Kuf Hei, the Gemara. The Rabbanan are chelik on Bananas and say it remains a suffix, and we divide what's besuffik. We say yachleiku. The Gemara brings down, then cites a story where a man rented a bathhouse from his friend and agreed to pay 12 zehuvim per year, one zehuv per month. That year, however, turned out to be a leap year with 13 months. And consequently, a dispute came between the landlord who wanted an extra zehuv for the 13th month and the tenant who claimed that 12 zehuvim covers the full year, including the leap month. Kuntras Aladaf says, Shmuel ruled that the tenant's obligation to pay for the 13th month depends on when the dispute erupted. If the landlord immediately, at the onset of the 13th month, demanded the extra rent, then the tenant is obligated to pay the extra zehuv. If, however, the landlord did not take up his case until the end of the month, then the ruling is in favor of the tenant and he's exempt from paying an extra zehuv for the leap month. The Rashbam explains that since the rental terms were unclear, Shmuel follows the rule of Hamaitzi Mechavero Olav Haraya. At the beginning of the month, before the tenant used the bathhouse, the landlord is considered the muchzak. He's in the possession of the house, and we therefore rule in his favor and give him the right to charge the extra zehuv for the extra month. Once, however, the tenant used the bathhouse, the tenant becomes the muchzak on the money, and he is therefore allowed to retain the extra zehuv. Taisus asks, why does the ruling change at the end of the month just because the tenant already used the bathhouse? He cites the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Dav Vav Amud Beis, which concludes that if a dispute erupts while claimant A is in possession of a disputed item, claimant B does not become the muchzak merely by seizing the possession, as we see Tok V'Kayin Metzia in Miyadei. Thus, asks Taisus, since there was already an uncertainty at the beginning of the month as to whether the 13th month is included in the 12 zehuvim rent, the tenant's usage for the 13th month is tantamount to seizing possession of a disputed item. Tfisa l'achar shenelet hasafik. So why then does he become a muchzak at the end of the month? Taisus answers that the fact that the landlord allowed the tenant to use the bathhouse all month in silence without demanding the extra rent is construed as haidah, admission, on his part, that the 13th month is indeed included in the 12 zehuvim yearly annual rental fee. It is only because of this haidah that the tenant is exempt from paying the extra month. Finally, if a meicher says, I am selling a chefetz for an istira, which is worth 90 prutas, and then he says, for 100 prutas, we say, tfais lashon achron, and he's chayev for 100 prutas, as Rav said. Daf Kuf Vav, the next Mishnah. If a seller says, I am selling a base core, and these are the borders, the din of mechila applies if he gives up to 1/6 less than he was supposed to, and the sale is valid. But if he gave land which was insufficient by more than a shtus, by more than 1/6, then he must give a refund. Gemara. If the differential is more than 1/6, the halacha is similar to the case of shum hadayanim, when a group of dayanim make an assessment for yusayimim or almanus, where if it's more than 1/6 off, we have to do a reassessment. Rabbi Yossi said, if we had a case of achim shechalku, three brothers use a lottery to divide up land they inherited from their father, i.e. who gets which piece of land, and this lottery will create a kinyan. If two brothers divide land, and later they discover they had a third brother, in Medinas Hayam, Rav says the original division becomes batel. Shpul says, the original chalukah is okay, but each brother must give 1/3 of their land to their new brother. Daf Kuf Zayin. Two brothers divide land from their father. Then, a Baal Chayv came and took Ruvain's property. Rav says, the chalukah is batel, and the land Shimon has must now be resplit. Shmuel says, it's tough luck for Reuven, so therefore he loses everything. Rav Asi is misupik, and therefore Reuven gets 1/4 of Shimon's land in money or karka. Rav holds yesh brera, and Shmuel holds ein brera, so each have a piece for themselves. We paskin like Rav, therefore they must redivide. If we have a choice of a smaller amount or a larger one, we take the smaller one because we say tafasta maruba lai tafasta, tafasta muat tafasta. The Mishnah. If one says to his friend, I'm selling you a half of a field, the buyer gets a chunk from the worst part of the field. The meicher, however, must give up to a chritz of 6 tvachim for the purpose of putting up a fence. Gemara. The purpose of the fence is to keep animals from going from one side to the other. This marks the end of this perek. Now let's begin perek ches yesh neichlin. As background, this perek deals with the halachas of nachala, inheritance. The first place these halachas appear in the Torah is regarding the benois Tzlafchad in Parshas Pinchas. Tzlafchad had daughters, but he had no sons. So Moshe Rabbeinu, via a request to Hashem, paskin that they get their father's chelek of land. The general rule is that Yerusha first moves downward, i.e. to children. If there are no children, then it moves upwards, to the parents. If there are no parents, the third area in line is sideways, i.e. to the brothers. The Mishnah gives us 4 categories of Yerusha. And the Mishnah says, there are certain relationships where relatives will inherit, yesh neichlin, and will give over an inheritance, i.e. manchilin. For example, yesh neichlin umanchilin. There are instances where relatives will inherit and will also give over inheritance. Should children die, the father inherits. Of course, this is only if there are no grandchildren, i.e. as we mentioned before, Yerusha always goes downward. So therefore, it first goes to children. If there are no children, it goes to the grandchildren, and so on and so forth. If that doesn't work and there is no downward direction for the Yerusha to fall, then it goes upwards to the father. And of course, it implies vice versa as well. Children inherit from a father. Also, brothers inherit from each other, if they are from the same father. Again, this is only if the father died as well, since first it goes down, then it goes up. If it can't go down or up, then it goes to the brothers. The Mishnah says this excludes brothers from a common mother. The second category is yesh neichlin v'lay manchilin, that these are people who receive a Yerusha, but they wouldn't give a Yerusha to the same person in the event that they died. For example, a son yarshins from his mother, but if he dies, the son dies, his mother does not yarshin. The father would, and if he died, the Yerusha would come back down to his father. Also, a man yarshins his wife, but his wife doesn't yarshin from him. The third category is manchilin v'loy neichlin. You don't receive, but you can only give over a Yerusha. For example, a woman gives to her children, but doesn't inherit from her children. Finally, the fourth category is loy neichlin v'loy manchilin. And this would be a case of achim min ha'em. And the Gemara says, why does the Mishnah start off with a rare case of a father inheriting from a son, if the son dies? This is a klola. Why not start with a more common case, which is a bracha? For example, the son outlives the father and then inherits the Yerusha from him. Our answer is, since nowhere in the Torah do we find the inyan of a father inheriting from a son, but it's learned from a drasha. It's chaviv, since it's learned from a drasha, therefore we learn it first. The rules of Yerusha are based on hakarav elav in the pasuk, that the order is sons, father, and then brother. The father goes between the son and the brother. The Gemara asks, why does a son have kadima in Yerusha versus a brother? The Gemara answers, because he can substitute for his father in the mitzvah of Yiyud and stay achuza, hektish in Yovel. Daf Kuftas. The pasuk teaches us that brothers can only inherit if there is no daughter. We also learn that a father has kadima before his brothers. The Gemara says the relatives on the side of the father create a situation of Yerusha, but not relatives on the side of the mother. Since Adoniyahu did a bad thing, like Avshalom did, i.e. he rebelled against the Malchus, the pasuk is Tailahim in Avshalom. Rabbi Elazar says, Li'olam yidbak adam b'tayvim. A person should marry into a good family, i.e. you should marry the daughter of a tzaddik, so his children will be tzaddikim. As we see, Moshe Rabbeinu, who didn't marry into Yichus, he married Bas Yisrael, he had a grandson, Yohainasan, who was an Ovid Avodah Zarah, Masha'en Kain Aaron, who married Bas Aminadav, who was a tzaddik, merited to have a grandson who was a tzaddik, i.e. Pinchas. Likewise, the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis brings a brisa which urges a person to go to great lengths to marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, or at least the daughter of one who is righteous and observant in mitzvahs. Daf Kuf Yud. Rava says, HaNoisei Isha Tzarech SheYidbak Biacheha. When you want to marry a woman, you should first investigate her brothers, as we learned from Aaron. Vayikach Aharon es Elisheva bas Aminodav achais Nachshain. He found out that Nachshain was a Nasi. A person, the Gemara says, should rather work for an Avodah Zarah and not have to take tzedakah. This doesn't mean that you can mamish work for an Avodah Zarah, but rather you should do an Avodah which is Zarah, strange to you, so you don't have to take tzedakah. This is better than taking money from tzedakah. For example, do menial labor like removing skins of an animal carcass in a shuk, and don't say this is beneath your dignity. Even though a Talmud Chacham must be careful not to degrade himself, Rav held that engaging in the toil of one's hands to earn an honest living is not considered degrading and is not below the dignity of even a noted Talmud Chacham like Rav Kahana. The Rambam says that a Talmud Chacham, based on this, should not burden his community with the responsibility of supporting him. Rather, he should engage in some sort of occupation, just as we find, says the Rambam, many Tanoim and Amoraim in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, who engaged in all sorts of occupations to earn a living rather than accept assistance from their respective communities. The Kesef Mishnah says, however, that Rabbanim who accept a salary from the community, that's okay, since this is their only means of support. How else are they supposed to support themselves? Therefore, we paskins that it's okay. The Ramah in Yeradeya, Simon Reish Mem Vav, Sifchav Aleph, writes that nowadays, if Rabbanim would take a second job, the people within their community would lose respect for them. Therefore, he says that the prevalent minhag in all communities is that they should pay their Rav a salary, so that he should not have to take another job, which would result in a degradation of Kavod HaTorah in the eyes of the masses. Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. By Nichsei Ha'em, it's a machlokes who has Kadima. Some say the son has Kadima. Zecharia ben Akatzif says that both sons and daughters are equal, because since Ben is learned from Bas in the Pasuk, V'chol Bas Yoreshes Nachla B'matais B'nei Yisrael, we say that Dayoi Lavoi Min Adin Liyais Kenodin. The Ben is limited to the Kayach of the Bas, but cannot be stronger. The Gemara says a Bechor only gets Pishnayim if he's a Bechor Min Av, not if he's a Bechor Min Aim, since the Pasuk says, Kihu Reshes Einai. It doesn't say Reshes Einai. This is Zachar versus Nekeva, Einai versus Einai. We also learn that a Bechor after the child of a miscarriage is also entitled to Pi Shnayim. The Rashbam points out that the criteria for Bechor regarding the obligation of Pidyon HaBen, redeeming of the firstborn, is different than regarding Yerusha. With regard to Pidyon HaBen, the Pasuk uses the term Peter Rechem, which implies that the first son to come out of his mother's womb, that's the Bechor. And therefore, the son who was born after the born of a stillborn baby is not to be redeemed, since he's not Peter Rechem. He's not the first exit of the womb. With regard, however, to Nachla, Reishis Einai, that indicates that the firstborn over whom the father will mourn, if he were to die, he inherits Pishnayim. Since one does not excessively mourn the death of a Nefil, the son born afterwards, who is the firstborn viable son, he's classified as the Bechor regarding inheritance. We learn that a husband yarshins from his wife from the pasuk of She'eroi, by Bamidbar Chav Zayin. We say that She'eroi is Ishtai. Daf Kuf Yud Beis. The pasuk in Yehoshua, Perek Chav Dalad, says that Elozer, the son of Aaron, was buried on a piece of land called Givas Pinchas, belonging to his son Pinchas. Inasmuch as Elozer and his son were Kohanim, and Kohanim were not apportioned any land in Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara says that Pinchas must have obtained the land by inheriting the land from his wife. The Gemara therefore proves that a man inherits from his wife. And finally, if a woman inherits property, it's better for her to marry someone in her own shevet, because if she marries outside her shevet, her husband will inherit her, not her son. Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. A husband only inherits what his wife actually has when she dies, not also what she may have been entitled to. For example, if first she died, then her father dies, he wouldn't get the father's property. Just like by Yerusha Rishayna, a son to a father, a son has Kadima, so too by all Yerushas. The Gemara says we only give out Yerusha by day, not at night. This is just like a psak of Bezdin, which should only take place by day, not at night. And since Nachla is considered a din, it's similar to this halacha of day-night. If three people go to visit a Shchiv Meira, someone on his deathbed, and the Shchiv Meira wants to write a will, they can either act as Edim, or act as a bezdin of three people. But if they act as a bezdin, it must be done by day, since tchilas edus must be by day. We also say, ein eid nasa dayan. Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. If someone makes a kinyan, how long does he have to change his mind and stop the deal? Rav says, as long as they're still sitting, he can be chayzer. Rabbi Yosef, who's how he paskin like, says only as long as they're speaking on this particular inyan, Once they change subjects, however, it's too late to change his mind. And we paskin, of course, like Rabbi Yosef, in the halachas of Sada, Inyan, and Mechza. Sada is a case if someone buys property next to his in-laws, and then his wife inherits some of the in-laws' property, he can't demand land next to his. Inyan is our case here, which we mentioned before. And Mechitza is if a man says, my property is half for you and half for my son, we assume he means half goes to each. The Gemara says, just like a husband can only inherit what his wife owned mamish, but not what she was ra'i to inherit, so too we say, ein ha-ben yerish imay bekever. The son can't yarshin from his mother after he dies, i.e. to pass on to his kids or his brothers. Finally, from a pasuk, we see both a father and a mother yarshin from a son. This is learned from Matais, that we're makish, mate ha-eim le-mate ha-av. Daf kuf tesvav. When dealing with a nephew and a niece, it's a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzev, who has kadima. The next Mishnah as background. First, as we've mentioned before, Yerusha always goes down. So it goes to a son. If there is no son, it goes to a grandson. And if there's no grandson, it goes to a great-grandson. If there are no son or descendants of the son, then it goes to the daughter. And then to the descendants of the daughters, and so on. If we can't go down at all, because there are no descendants going downward, then it goes up to the father. If there is no father, the father yarshins it bekever. There has to be a father, but let's say the father died, and the father yarshins it bekever, even though he dies. And it then comes back down and it goes to his children, i.e. to the brothers of the mace. We say, of course, as we mentioned before, first Yerusha goes down, then Yerusha goes up, then Yerusha goes across. But the way Yerusha goes across to the brothers isn't that it just goes across, but rather the father is Yerush Bekever, and then it comes back down again, and it goes to the brothers. So again, the rule is that Yerusha always goes down, unless there's nowhere to go, then it goes up, and then it comes back down again. If the mace has no brothers, then the Yerusha goes up to the grandfather, and then passes down to his children, i.e., uncles of the mace. So the Seder is, number one, sons. Number two, it goes down to the descendants of the sons. Or goes, number three, down to the descendants of the daughter. If all that doesn't work, it goes up to the father. If that doesn't work, number five, it goes down to the brothers. If that doesn't work, then it goes up to the grandfather. And finally, then it comes back down to the uncles. And the Mishnah says, the Seder Nachlois, the order of succession, is as follows. The Pasuk in Bamidbar Chav Zayin says, Ish ki yamas uben einloi, vahavartem es nachalosai levitai. The son always comes before the daughter. The grandsons also come before the daughter. But the daughter comes before the father or the brothers. And all descendants of the daughter come before the father or the brothers. The brothers of the mace, or their descendants, come before the grandfather. The general rule is that anyone who has the right to Yerusha, all of his descendants will come before anyone else. For example, if the daughter has the rights, her children, or grandchildren, or great-grandchildren, come before it'll move back up to the father. Also, a father takes precedent over brothers. And the Gemara says, how do we know that all descendants of the son have first rights, even great-grandchildren? The Gemara answers, the Pasuk says, Uven Einlai. The extra Vav tells us that you must be Ma'ayin to see if there are any relatives of the son who exist before the daughter gets any Yerusha at all. Anyone who says that a daughter should inherit together with a granddaughter, we don't listen to him. This is called the case of Bas Habein. This is the descendants of the sons, the Bas Habein, come first. On the day of the 24th of Teves, which was a happy day, we returned to the true halacha of Yerusha, and the tzdukim were maida that a bas doesn't yarshin together with the Bas Habein. One old man challenged the ruling of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who made this psak. The halacha is almost always like Shmuel in monetary matters, since he was called the king of monetary matters. We also paskin generally like Shavar Malka, the king of Persia, with regard to monetary matters. Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. Rabbi Yochanan says anyone who doesn't leave a son as a yerush, Hashem is filled with anger against him. But others say it means that one is supposed to have a Talmud. Rabbi Yochanan used to console Avelim by showing them the bone of his 10th son who died. Since all 10 of his sons died, this was used as a means of nechama. Pinchas ben Chama said, poverty in a house is worse than 50 makas. Therefore, a person should be mispal to have money and not be poor. He also said, anyone who has a chayla in his house should go to a Talmud Chacham and ask the Talmud Chacham to be mispal for the chayla to remove the gzar din. And finally, if we have the grandfather of the mace and the brother of the mace, who has kadima, the Gemara says, according to Rava, the brother comes first.